freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Power through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Don't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Brock, maybe you can help me as I try to determine whether this is a me thing or whether this is a full-fledged reckoning thing.
Mm.
But what we're watching right now in the women's college basketball scene feels to me like one of those mega moments in sports. Not a normal moment, a mega moment.
Mm-hmm.
A sea change kind of a moment. Women's sports has obviously had big leaps forward before, right? The World Cup soccer with Mia Hamm and that whole crew.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you want to throw FloJo and Jackie Joyner-Kersee in there, what they did for track in their time. There's a couple of other good examples of it, but this one feels really enormous to me. The most exciting player in college basketball is a woman.
Yep.
It's not even really all that close.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know that I could just, I mean, now I've seen Zach Edey and a couple of other guys because of the tournament, but by far the biggest name in college hoops is Caitlin Clark. I don't even think it's particularly close.
Yeah, I think, quite honestly, the only college athlete that has a Q rating that could be somewhat similar is Caleb Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you took Caitlin Clark and you walked her down a street in a city, and you took Caleb Williams and you walked him down a street in a city, like, it'd be an interesting observation.
She'd stand out with her height.
She is arguably the greatest, not just college basketball player right now, Salk. She's the greatest college athlete in all of America right now. That is not hyperbole. I mean, honestly, Jaden Daniels and Caitlin Clark, who's got a higher Q rating? It's not even close. He won the Heisman Trophy. It's not even close. Caitlin Clark's popularity, Caitlin Clark's just star power, Caitlin Clark's Q rating, all of it. It is Caleb Williams would be the only college athlete in all of sport to even compete with her. So that's what you're talking about, and I'm not going to walk you back from it. I mean, okay, she good. Is a transcendent talent.
I should probably put Venus Williams and Serena especially onto that
list
as well of,
no
of women that really moved the game forward for female athletes. Obviously, if you want to go way back, you can certainly do that, right, in women's tennis and Billie Jean King and all
that. I mean, Annika Sorenstam and Michelle Wee, Michelle was supposed to be that next, transformative, transcendent athlete, did not turn out to be what Caitlin Clark has been here over 4 years.
And the other reality is that golf, tennis, track, soccer, they're not basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, like, they're soccer, obviously, national, internationally, and tennis and golf are, they all have their own space.
Yep.
Right? But she's playing basketball. She's playing one of the four major sports in America. Three, if you don't want to include hockey and you don't think that quite rises to the level. Doing it better and at a higher Q rating level than, as you said, any of the men in the country right now.
Yeah,
that really is an enormous statement. And the game, the women's game, has improved by leaps and bounds over the last decade. It is so much faster. The ability to move to the basket is so much better than it was. And look, I've tried watching the NBA, nonstop step backs, and just a lot of college hoops has just been dribble drive motion over the last few years.
Yep.
The women's game seems like it's got a little bit of everything. I think it's significant. I'm stating it right now today. The women's game is significantly more fun to watch.
It is more fun to watch. It is more fun to watch. People have said this for years and years and years. And obviously my wife was a basketball player. My girls are basketball players. And you hear people in the past say, oh man, I just so enjoy watching the women's game so much more. It's so much more fundamental. They actually pass and they screen and they cut. But to your point, now it's fundamental with a flash. Now I got a pastor last night that texted me. He's like, this is the first time I've ever watched this gal. She is special.
Mm-hmm.
She's shooting 40-footers. She's got this range coming off screens. I mean, she has just got a flash and a charisma, Salk, and a style that isn't just, quote-unquote, fundamental.
Well, yeah.
It is.
I will say, I mean, watching women's hoops in the past, and I mean going back like a decade plus, I felt like what you saw at the time, and maybe this is my own weird memory or whatever, was a lot of like kind of two-handed push shots of girls that just didn't quite have the strength to take a significant jump shot from the 3-point line. I don't see any of that anymore. I look, the game just looks awesome. It is incredibly aesthetically pleasing to watch the game in a way that it's not watching the men's game. And I haven't enjoyed watching the NBA or men's college hoops now in like 15 years.
Yep. Well, especially the way Caitlin plays. That ball just moves, man. And we've said this all year, and this, you don't have to just be a women's basketball fan or Caitlin Clark. You just have to be a sports fan. Like, she just plays it differently, and she loves to pass as much as she does score. And last night, it was 9 3-pointers. Last night, we talked about it. I felt like, you know, this was going to probably be the end, and you were bracing yourself for Cecily's tears. Yep. And then all of a sudden they start out and the two teams cannot miss, and they're putting on the first 5 minutes. They score 50 points combined, and it is an absolute showcase. I think once Caitlin got out of some of that Iowa City bubble and the weight of the world and all the expectation and all the pressure, she's been free in these other environments. Certainly these two games up in Albany, and we'll go to Cleveland for the Final Four. And I think still feel some of that freedom. They should beat UConn. It should be them in South Carolina again, which will be an amazing storyline.
South Carolina is a better team, right?
Oh, by far. Not even close.
That is sort of the one, issue. It's like, her team's not that good. They're okay.
Yes.
Right? The other girls on the team are okay. There's
a couple of them will rise, and Kate Martin last night rise to the occasion and had some great shots. But by and large, yeah, you would have taken like four other LSU girls and Caitlin. You would take four other South Carolina girls and Caitlin.
Yeah.
Maybe UConn, it's kind of split, maybe even there's 3-2, but she's just that. Yeah, man. And then she just does it with the grace. I'm waiting, and Titus last night as we're watching, he's like, do you think she's going to go, or she's going to wave goodbye to Angel? I'm like, I don't think so. That's just not her brand.
It seemed like they'd sort of put that in the past, and the two of them kind of talking up their off-court respect for each other and all of it. I know, I thought LSU, I didn't think that Kim Mulkey coached a very good game last night, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
She...
Oh, and our local kid had a tough one.
Ooh. Oh, my gosh. I mean, Haley Van Lith was felt atrocious so bad yesterday.
Saul, if you would have watched Haley Van Lith
rush too,
her
nationally.
Sophomore year of high school, I saw Haley Van Lith her sophomore year of high school.
I remember you talking about her.
And I remember Dory Monson talking to me about this. Dory saw some great women's basketball player over the last 20 years in the state of Washington. She's like, there's nothing like that gal. Kobe Bryant, remember, went to her little small town over there outside of Wenatchee to watch her play high school. If you would have watched her sophomore year, you would not have seen, like, last night, I don't know if she was sick. I don't know if the pressure of it. I don't know if she had no joy. I don't know what it was. But, man, she had a tough, tough night. And, yeah, they just continued to single up Caitlin. Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You're not going to double her. You're not going to face guard her. You're not going to take the ball out of her hands. You are going to lose.
And they certainly did that. And then I thought on the other end, I know you kind of threw back. You and I were arguing about everything last night on text.
Sure, it was an argument.
You were kind of throwing back Angel Reese's overall numbers.
Yeah,
she didn't shoot for a great percentage last night. But there were, like, I thought that their offense functioned a lot better when they got the ball to her in the post. A lot of those missed shots she had were on putback attempts and that type of stuff. I felt like when they got the ball to her in the post, she was able to either pass out of it or go to the basket. And I didn't think Mulkey had a particularly good game.
No, she did not have a great game. No, she did not. I think she was overwhelmed by Caitlin again. I think some of these coaches get into this and like, oh, we can do this. Like, we can still stop her. Like, we can single her. I mean, Haley's a great player.
She's shooting from 40 feet without a problem. Right. This was Kim Mulkey after the game.
What did I say to her? I said, I sure am glad you leaving. I said, girl, you something else. Never seen anything like it.
Did you see the video? She like attacked her. She was kind of giving her a hug, but she kind of like looked like she was trying to strangle her or something. Like, please don't murder her. Still got a couple more games to play.
It is so stinking fun, man. That's it, right? We talked about this 15 years ago on this show with Russell Wilson. We've talked about it with certain athletes, certainly with Julio as well. Salk, there is just a fun factor. Mm-hmm. There's a fun factor. We talk about the star power and all of this and her fame and her attention, her exposure, all of it. But there is just a fun factor if you just tune in and watch.
And that's probably coming with the gal from USC, right? Juju's pretty phenomenal
awesome
to watch. We'll get to see one more game at least of Paige Beckers is pretty fun.
Yep.
And then South Carolina with their entire team and just what they do getting after you. So I honestly think this is a seminal moment, a watershed kind of a thing where I don't know that I'll look at women's sports the same. Not in terms of my enjoyment watching it, although clearly that has been, raised significantly. But just in terms of the national level of interest and intrigue, I got a text from a friend, an older friend, who said, for me, Iowa-LSU last night felt like Indiana State-Michigan State.
Yeah.
Larry versus Magic in 1979. Yep. Yeah. The men's game exploded after that game.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wonder if that was... If this has kind of an impact,
sign me up.
Be pretty darn cool. All right. Coming up, let's give you guys everything you need to know. The Mariners did one thing differently than in any of their first four games, and it led to a win last night. We'll tell you what it was next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
There's a win for the Mariners last night as they get back up over 500 at 3-2. They do it by scoring five runs, three of them coming right here.
Al on at third, tie the runner at first. The pitch, swinging a fly ball deep into the gap in left center field. Freeman going back to the warning track, to the wall. Goodbye, baseball! Dom Canzone with his first home run of the 2024 season.
He crushed that one, Brock, and... Yep. Look, the strikeouts were still there, nine more strikeouts in this game, but you can take the strikeouts when you walk six times and hit a home run. Two outs on the bases. Yeah, we can talk through that. It's probably not something you want to see, but I really thought that the walks were incredibly important for them last night.
Better things offensively, obviously. Tonight we got six walks, which is a really good sign for us. We got the big homer from Dom, and then, you know, living the life of Julio.
Living the life of Julio. Some amazing, amazing plays. One that he wanted back, and obviously running through the stop sign was not ideal, so we can debate and talk about that a little bit later. But when you get those walks, and you wrote this last night, Salk, you just start to change the heartbeat of that pitcher. You'd get traffic on the bases, and it just changes their rhythm and everything about them. And I don't know, man. Like, we talk about these 40 times, and we're, you know, keying into the draft, and we're 3 weeks away from all of that. You watch guys run a 40. Right. And now I can watch him at the combine and yep, that's a 4.6 guy. Oh, there's a 4.4 guy. Like, how much of a difference does 4.6 to 4.4 make? Well, it's like the same thing. Canzone hit a 91, 92 mile an hour fastball. The difference between 91, 92 and Stanek throwing 98, 99, huge, huge, totally noticeable. And taking advantage of a cookie like that and depositing it over center field at 400 plus feet, 110 miles an hour. Pretty good confidence builder, I would think, for Mr. Canzone.
Throw a little credit at Emerson Hancock as well. He pitched into the sixth inning to earn his first major league win. Pitched to contact, just one walk, but only one strikeout, allowed three runs. Good news on the injury front here as well. Mitch Garver back in the lineup after missing three straight. He took a walk, actually a key walk last night to lead to the home run. Brash starting to throw a slider. Santos had a clean MRI. And then Justin Hollander said Brian Wu is back up, starting to get ready to throw, and they are still confident that that injury is not long-term.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Tremendous, tremendous night of women's college hoops. Maybe it didn't have the great ending, but that's the only thing that would keep it from being an instant classic. That was a fantastic game. It delivered in every other way. Caitlin Clark, sublime. 41 points, 12 assists, 7 boards, 9 threes. She went nuts in the third quarter.
I think just confidence, being confident in all the work that I put in, trusting my teammates. But we really knew it was on the defensive end. We knew we were going to be able to be fine on offense. We've been fine on offense all year. I think it was just getting stops and being physical. They rebounded the ball really well, but we weathered every storm. You got to give them a lot of credit. They had a great year.
Yeah, it was just awesome. You know, obviously I am biased. I've always loved women's basketball from when I was watching Molly play it, you know, 30 years ago, 25 years ago in college, Salk, to watching the evolution of it now. And you pointed that out earlier. It's a jump shot. You know, back in the day, there were not many jump shots. There were a lot of set shots. There were people shooting three-pointers. Molly was a great three-point shooter in college. But she didn't do it coming off screens in the air the way that Caitlin Clark does, right? I mean, the way she elevates, the way she creates just a little bit of space, and she hit one of those threes in the third quarter, Salk, right in Kim Mulkey's face, right at about 35 feet, and you're just like, and I was sitting there in that moment like, man, I really wish we had a thought bubble for Kim Mulkey's head right there, because it would have been like, I don't know. We are
I don't know
toast.
What else to do here, right? Yep. Like, this girl is just completely destroying us. She is that kind of talented. On the other side, LSU tried to use its size. They did get after the boards, that's for sure. But Iowa reversing last year's result. They go to their second straight Final Four. UConn gets 26 from Paige Beckers. They advance past USC. So Friday night, South Carolina, NC State, Iowa, UConn should be a blast.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Packer win again, Brock. 3-2 for them last night. But the news.
I think they got a fourth goal.
Oh, you're right. They did put one in at the very end. You're right. They're a little empty netter. Jared McCann.
Not being right.
Jordan Eberle had a little fun trying to get the puck into the net with the, without the goalie there. But Shane Wright really was the story.
Elite shooter at times. And it used to be all the time. Through center. Nice play, Shane Wright. He kicks it out. Everly's in for Wright. They score! That's hockey, baby! What a play! Shane Wright on the spot. Set up beautifully by Jordan Eberle. The Kraken back up by two.
I know we're not going to get nearly enough time to talk about this today, but I could for a while. I love what Hakstol did, putting him on a line with Eberle and Schwartz, a couple of veterans who know the game, play responsibly, and allow him to kind of just go be comfortable and confident. And you know what he did? Played a great game. Not just that goal, though that was a nice goal. He looked bigger, Brock. He was much more confident and physical in the corners, and he consistently went to the front of the net. Fun game from Shane Wright.
How did you do it? How did you have all three on? You had the Mariners on one. You had the women's basketball on one. You had the hockey on one.
I was mostly watching the Mariners on the big screen.
Okay.
They ended in time to watch the entirety of the third period.
Oh, you did. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, good. I don't know what we're going to learn. I think that's going to be some of the challenge. I think it was a couple years ago, the Mariners. Maybe it was like as they were starting to build in their young core, and we looked at their September, and it was against brutal, hard competition. Like, they were playing like playoff teams almost every series. You're like, this will be great. You're going to kind of get a gauge. You're going to get a feel for what playoff baseball is like because everybody they're facing in that stretch.
Good.
Yeah, but this is a little different.
It's like not bad.
No, you're not going to face many. I think they got like one good team left.
So. That's all right. I still want to see the kid, and I thought what we saw last night was definitely a good sign. Shows that things have been improving for him like we were hoping while he's been in Coachella. All right, that's everything you need to know. A quarter past every hour here on
Quick Confession.
The Brock and Salk
Quick
Show.
Confession.
Well, you're confessing too.
Yeah, I'm stirring it up. Oh. I started up this morning with Field Yates. Just said, just be careful. Just be careful. You're walking into, I just felt like as a guest, and certainly when I booked him and all the, you know, grief you gave me yesterday, I said, just be careful. You're walking into a storm.
Yeah.
I had no idea the rivalry between BB&N and Belmont Hill.
Very, very significant. Yeah. Yes.
So we'll see how
this
goes.
My elite private high school and his elite private high school. Yeah. It's quite a rivalry anytime those two teams get together.
Big, big pillow fight coming your way next.
Yeah. This is going to be rough. Field Yates will join us ostensibly to talk Penix, but we'll see where it goes. Coming up, I'm Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, rolling along here, Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710. Field Yates. I don't believe we've ever spoken to Field here on the show, but he joins us from ESPN. Field, good morning.
Gentlemen, good morning. Thanks for having me on. I feel like I may have done show a long time ago, but that tells you just how memorable of an appearance it was, given the fact that nobody recalls it besides
me. Well, maybe I didn't. I think I would have remembered only because of you know, our shared ISL past, and I don't remember. Maybe
you're
I
shared
didn't
what
ISL? It's the Independent School League. No big deal, Brock. You know, it's such vaunted athletes as Jake Bobo and Matty Beniers, yes.
And Zach Zinter as well, soon to be NFL player Zach Zinter. He would work well in Seattle, just as an aside.
I mean, do you know how excited I would be if Zach Zinter ends up coming to Seattle?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
ZZ Top?
I mean,
oh, big time.
The idea that there's a BB&N lineman. That there's a BB&N lineman that's not playing at like Trinity College in Connecticut, but is instead potentially going to play in the NFL. It's shocking, Field. What has happened to the ISL?
It's a powerhouse. You know, you think about the great conferences in terms of sports. You know, the SEC West for football traditionally, Pac-12 this past year, rest in peace, and football. You think about some of the powerhouses. That's basically what the ISL has become. I mean, it's a breeding ground.
Yes.
And I'm not even the best ISL athlete from my own family. My wife, who's actually athletic, went to Brooks, which another one of the ISL schools.
Sure.
We hope that our kids get all of her athletic genes because she was the one that didn't pay for college because she was good enough to get a scholarship at BC to play field hockey.
Wow.
So the ISL really does bring out the best in athletes.
So let me just ask you quickly, and then we're going to talk, about real football. But because Tim Hasselbeck and others have been making fun of me for years, and many people have not believed that there were tees after every football game that was played in the ISL, I thought maybe you could back me up. Do you remember the post game tee celebrations?
The post game tee, I don't totally recall that personally. Am I missing something here? Like, I'm not that old. I have my 20th high school reunion next year. I think that's correct. I turned 37 later this month. Wow. I don't think I'm that old.
Did you play football?
The tee. I did. Did I play football? Dominant football player. Of course. Good enough to get, not a scholarship, but good enough to get the opportunity to go play at Wesleyan.
Right.
Down the road from Trinity. So another one of those. The NESCAC is basically just a college version of ISL.
That's
and I'm
true.
Sure that all the listeners out there right now are like, something? When they submit the Emmy reel for Rock and Salt, or when, Barry Sports Radio does his rankings of the best shows in the country, this will be the segment that they think of. They think of why the show is named number one.
Yeah.
It will have nothing to do with Field Yates' tweet on Friday Friday when you were was it a red eye out of town on Friday?
So red eye, red eye out of town. Yeah.
So you're on Montlake for pro day. You put on you watch all the guys put on a show. We'll get to that, and then you head over to the Red Sox Mariners game at T-Mobile, and then you just fly right on out of town on Thursday, huh?
Yeah, I made it an efficient trip. I got two young kids. My oldest is two, so two daughters under the two and under. So you realize pretty quickly that you find the fastest flight route to and from wherever you head out, especially this time of the year when there's a lot of travel prior to the draft. But it was hard to leave after just 36 hours. And I've been to Seattle. I've got cousins about to graduate from college who grew up there, so I've been out to visit her a few times. But I think my appreciation probably hadn't reached the level that it did when I went out for this past trip. And maybe it's the realization, and this is something that Falk and I can certainly agree on, is that, we're from outside of Boston, where obviously we have four professional sports teams. And then we also have Boston College, which is not as big as UW, but it's still it's an ACC school. And the difference in appreciation for the college and the pro teams in Seattle versus most cities that I have been to was so noticeable. It's just a short period of time. It's almost like in a lot of towns, you have room for one or the other. And if I didn't know that the Seahawks and the Mariners and the Kraken, hopefully soon the Sonics once again, are in Seattle, I would have thought to myself, this is a college town. And then vice versa, conversely, if I'd gone out there for a Seahawks game, I probably would have not realized how big of a deal UW was. But the energy was incredible at that game. I've heard they're already expecting maybe a record size crowd for the spring game on May 5th for UW football. And this is coming off of obviously a year in which they lost a ton of players. So one of my favorite cities to visit. I'm not just saying that because I'm on the show, and certainly on the short list for best sports cities in the country because of the fact that they have room for college teams and pro teams. And it seems like nobody gets shortchanged.
What did you see at the pro day?
Well, certainly the headliner was Michael Penix Jr. and his throwing session, although he did have a pretty darn good athletic workout prior to that. He did both the jumps and he also ran the 40. Pro days, everybody has their own watch, so it's hard to say specifically what time he ran. But I was sitting there right behind probably, a dozen scouts and Roma Dunze, who was also taking his own time for his teammate Michael Penix Jr. And a lot of people were somewhere basically the consensus was somewhere between 4.56 and 4.59. So that's a good time, obviously. The ball, and I've seen him throw in person before. It wasn't my first time. But every time you see him, you just think, this thing, the ball just flies off of his hand. The amount of natural power that Michael Penix Jr. drives on the football every single throw is just ridiculous. Usually in these pro days, these quarterbacks work sort of short to intermediate to long in terms of the throws that they are going through. And so he finished up with the deep passing and it's effortless. It's just a rocket that he has attached to his left arm. So it was really fun to see that. I understand there is at times some fool's gold that goes into putting too much stock in a quarterback's pro day. You don't want to overreact too much. To me, it's, does the guy look like what you expect him to look like? And he sure did. And beyond that, I know no one really cares for the next 3 weeks on sort of the average fan level about how offensive tackles look. But I've seen both these guys play. I've seen both of them practice in person before, both Troy Fautanu and Roger Rosengarten. But I tell you what, even without pads, the way those guys move is straight up ridiculous. I mean, those are two NFL offensive tackles waiting to be taken, probably in the first, you know, certainly in the first round for Fautanu, and then definitely in the second round for Roger Rosengarten. I feel like he's the kind of guy that's name is only going to get hotter and hotter as we get closer to April 25th.
Other than your wife, your two beautiful young girls, everything going on, you spend a lot of time leading up to this draft with one Mel Kiper, and I know you did yesterday, and will over the weeks ahead. I would say, I don't know, maybe this is incorrect, but it feels like, perception-wise, that maybe Mel is kind of jumping on the Penix train a little bit after the Daniel Jeremiahs and Charles Davis and some of the others have really ratcheted him up the old draft boards. Where does Mel sit today? Having spent time with him yesterday, where does Mel sit today on Michael Penix?
Yeah, I think Mel, and I think he and I see it similarly in this regard, feel as though the race for the fifth quarterback taken is a two-quarterback race. It's two familiar foes, and Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix, obviously. And I think that the reality with Mike is probably this, is he has a couple of question marks that teams are going to feel different about just based off of their medical staff. Obviously, that's a big part of it, right? You know, he's got two torn ACLs, he's got two shoulder injuries. He also is a quarterback who, while more athletic than people gave him credit for, which was evidenced by those two jumps in the 40 time, is not the same caliber of athlete as a Jaden Daniels or a Drake May. It's going to come down to style of play. What kind of quarterback, what kind of offense do you want to run? That, to me, more than each person's individual ranking will decide which quarterback is fifth in this class and which quarterback is sixth in this class. So Mike is, you know, he's got a certain magnetism as well that I think will shine through when he's doing these pre-draft interviews over the next 3 weeks, probably a couple of private workouts as well. I mean, the energy in that building when he was doing his jumps and his runs and in the throwing session, it was pretty clear that on a team full of future NFL draft picks, that one was kind of the northern star for that Washington offense. It was, of course, Mike. So he's going to do really well for himself over the next 3 weeks. And I think the range for him could be as soon as the first 12 or 15 picks once we get to April 25th.
You get a sense as to what the heck the Seahawks are going to do with 16. We've been talking about it, obviously, for so long, and I'm still not sure any of us have too much of a clue what they're going to end up doing there.
No, so here's, you know, as far as what I think happens in 16, you know, my logic cat tells me, you know, you got to keep hammering away at that offensive line. There are still some players that are available, and John Schneider has talked at times this offseason about how, like, you know, there are ways that we can fill that guard spot, and we will continue to look into that guard spot after losing Damian Lewis and free agency and Phil Haynes and, you know, feeling like when healthy, their two young tackles are still going to be excellent players for quite some time. So it feels like guard would be a pretty logical starting point for Seattle. It feels like Troy Fautanu, if he's there at pick number 16, would be a hand-in-glove fit. He wouldn't have to move. He would have to move only positions. But I give him a ton of credit for this. He has talked openly during the process about how he's amenable to the idea of playing something besides left tackle, which I'm not trying to make this sound dramatic necessarily, but I find it like fairly selfless of a kid who's been not a good left tackle, but an incredible left tackle to say, I'm good with moving a guard if that's what the team wants. For me, I think there are others in his position that would say, screw you. No, I'm a left tackle. I've been a great left tackle. I've been, you know, the front side protector for, you know, arguably the best quarterback in college football for the past 2 years. So I'm going to stick it at left tackle. The fact that he's been open, at least during the pre-draft process, to playing on the right side, to me, I thought was really notable. Not on the right side, inside, I should say, is really notable. And I think we'll end up serving him really well as well. So Troy Fautanu, if he's there at 16, which I'm not totally certain he is, guys. It would be a great story, obviously, but man, would it be a big, big value for them as well, given the fact that, you know, at worst, he's a really good offensive guard, but you have the flexibility that if one of the two tackles gets hurt, you have, you know, your big number 55 being back outside to his familiar spots and playing one of those two roles.
The sense his agent maybe in a couple years field is going to make sure he's a left tackle. I don't know. Maybe.
Tell you what though, Brock, it's starting to, it's a good time to be a guard these days. You know,
it's
guys that are there's some big numbers. Robert Hunt got a 5-year, $100 million contract this offseason. You know, Chris Lindstrom, another Massachusetts kid, let's keep that theme going, got a 5-year, $105 million deal. He's from Dartmouth, which is like, that's a tiny town in Mass. It's like, even I don't know where that is on the map, but he's a rich man, I'll tell you that much. And but you're right. I mean, it's actually been a little while since we had a young ascending left tackle that timed it up perfectly in free agency because teams are so aggressive in extending them early. So it won't be long before some offensive tackle signs for, you know, $27-28 million a year. Next thing you know, we're talking about how tackles are once again way outpacing guards. But it's not a terrible time right now to be a guard.
You know what I just realized, Salt? Not only all this Massachusetts connection. I mean, we got Passan in 45 minutes. You ever bump into the hallways with Passan and the two of you look at each other, Jeff Passan, Field Yates, and go, gosh, you got great hair. No, you got great hair.
Wow.
No, you really have great hair.
I tell you what, you know, what's funny is I was at the last time I saw Passan, he does come to Bristol on occasion. He's Kansas City based. It's where he's from, where he still lives. And I'm in Vegas for the Super Bowl, and I'm getting on the hotel elevator. And all of a sudden, this guy and his kid, you know, the thing about Passan that's really deceptive, guys, is he looks so young, and he is young. He's got like a 17-year-old kid, though. He must have been a young dad because his son, he's like, yeah, this is my son. I'm like, is that your son or your brother? Like, you guys are the same size? Like, this kid's got a deeper voice than you do. And they were there for the Super Bowl to support the Chiefs, obviously. So I don't see him a ton in Bristol just because most of his work seems to be out there in the field or just based in Kansas City. But I do love myself some Jeff Passan. That guy is the man. Who doesn't? That's a good call. And I'm surprised you guys haven't asked me for my thoughts on the Mariners, which I'm sure you will do with Passan in 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm. What?
I don't have much to offer.
I want to figure out how you met a girl from Brooks. I mean, Belmont Hill, all boys school, famously.
Yeah.
How did you meet a girl from Brooks? That's probably a story for another day, but a very impressive job by you.
Well, hey, we lived in the same street in Boston after school. So we were both living downtown, and the street we lived on was like a few miles long, but we were on the same street. And so she walked by my, her block. She walked by my block every day on the way to work. So one of those small world moments and happenstances. So it was
one of you lived on Beacon Street in Boston, the other in Newton, but somehow you were able to connect that it was the same street. Very impressive. All right.
Good Massachusetts humor right there. Thank you. It's pretty accurate.
The people will love it. There's nothing Seattleites like more than when I remind them that I'm originally from Boston.
Totally.
All right. Great stuff, Field. Thank you. Let's make sure we do this again. Apparently with less time in between than the last. How's that?
That sounds good. I'll try to be more memorable each time that I come on the show now.
There you go.
Well, there's Field Yates. Big start. Thank you, Field.
Great stuff, as always. That's fun. I'm impressed. Met a girl from Brooks. That's impressive.
Is that a big deal out your way? That's a big deal?
Meeting a girl from Brooks?
Yeah.
No, just when you go to Belmont Hill, if you can meet any girl, I think it's generally like kind of a big thing.
Gotcha.
Right? I mean, they're not
You know
like
what?
Walking
I totally actually now remember, and somewhere Kyle Brown may be driving right now and smiling when I say this. We had a Field on. Maybe it was in your absence. To be honest, maybe it was Danny was in, and Kyle's like, can't you just picture him with a sweater tied around his neck?
I do remember that,
playing a little pickleball, a little tennis out in Nantucket.
Yeah,
I mean, just
I do kind of remember that.
Yeah, do you
now
remember
that, is
that
sort of starting to sound familiar?
Oh, but he is fun and witty and connected and done an awesome job, kind of really understanding this draft and working with Mel Kiper over these years and. Yep, there's yet another one. Put that in the box of Michael Penix possibly in the top 15 with Daniel, with Joel, with a bunch of others.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Well, then I got to ask you first off about Michael Penix, Brock. I got to tell you, I'm getting annoyed. I just want you to know.
So am I.
I'm getting annoyed.
I'm more annoyed because of these tees. This may be all a falsehood. Maybe this has been some little radio story that you put in your head.
It's not a story.
And all of a sudden, we talk about these post-game tee with your opponent and Field Yates. Like, what? I never did that. What are we talking about here? Are you misremembering?
No, I'm not. You get Larry Salk on here, he'll tell you. No one has a better memory than my dad.
Okay.
No one will tell you better than him.
What are you annoyed with the Penix?
I'm annoyed with this Penix thing. Oh, he had injuries 2 years ago, and he's never allowed to overcome. Like, what else can the guy do to show that he's over these injuries? It's just driving me nuts. Will he be first-round pick, and why?
I think he will, yeah. I think when push comes to shove, and our buddy Matt Miller, is he coming on tomorrow?
You know what? That's not confirmed yet.
We're working on that? You're working on that? Okay. You know, when he talks about there's 18 first-round talents in this draft, and he didn't have, obviously, Penix or Nix. He didn't even have J.J. McCarthy on that list. And I'll get to that here in just a second. When there's that few, you're going to push a quarterback up. And especially one, as you heard from Field, as you've heard from Daniels, as you've heard from Charles, as you've heard from all of them, like, man, this ball just explodes out of his hand when you're just different like that. And it's hard throwing a football to be unique and different in this day and age. There's not many that come out of the draft, Salk. You're not hearing that about Caleb or Jaden or J.J. or Drake May. They throw it fine, but they don't throw it like this guy. So you can be annoyed by the injury, but be appreciative and, I guess, find joy in the fact that this guy is such a unique talent, and they do understand that. And when you do, you slide into that first round, and maybe even this this Vegas team in the top 15 of this draft as well.
All right, question number two.
By the way, if the great Al Davis was still alive, yeah, he'd be going to the Raiders, period, end of story.
That's true.
He'd be done.
Traits, thanks, yes. I'm all set.
He can throw it 80 yards?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, sign me up.
And let's put the fastest people you can find on the outside, whether they know how to catch the ball or not, like James Jett and Alexander Wright, and just let them go run as fast as they can.
That's right.
See, I got some memory. A little Alexander Wright reference today. Brock, question number two. Seahawks, if they're looking to bolster a position group, what else is out there right now in free agency?
Well, I'll be kind of curious, Salk. Now, the UFL, which I'm going to be a part of on some of these weekends, is not doing the kickoff that the NFL is doing. That is an XFL. That came about a couple years ago when Fox was doing the XFL with ESPN, and then obviously it went away through COVID, and it came back with ESPN the XFL, and they did the kickoff. I call it jousting. It's the best way that I can say it about this kickoff. It's like, think of jousting. The kick return team and the kickoff cover team are literally jousting, and then they got to go get this returner. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep a keen eye over the next couple weeks into this draft, into free agency, and into these OTAs as teams start working this, that, you know what, there's going to be somebody, not just somebody, there are going to be a few buddies that are going to be and get jobs as kickoff returners, because it's going to be more prevalent. You saw Cordero Patterson signed, right? There's a few different guys. There's a LaVisca Chenault that is out there that was a dynamic dude out of college, kind of underperformed as a receiver. He's out there. There's going to be guys in this UFL. Deion Kane had a couple kickoff return touchdowns last year, and he was an old Clemson receiver. You may have remembered him, big, tall guy, athletic. Good player, but just in a great kickoff return. There is going to be, just keep an eye on this, over the days, the weeks ahead, there's going to be opportunities for that phase of the game to come back to life a little bit. It was, 21% last year? 22% return kicks, so almost 80% in the end zone.
Can I ask a weird question?
Sure.
If it does come back, is it going to require the same skills? Like the one, you have to be really fast to be a kickoff returner with the
system. You
still have
to be fast, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you have to have burst, but I see your point.
Will size be a little bit more important, or almost more like running backs rather than just all wide receivers and corners?
I think maybe cutting through all of that is the word vision.
You're going to always have to have that.
You do, but even more so, like a real vision, because you're just looking at all of these, like there's an A gap, B gap, C gap, D gap, E gap, F gap, G gap, like all of these little different gaps and you're going to see different schemes, right? There's going to be a lot to learn for these special teams coaches.
More running backs returning kicks.
Well, that's maybe why Arizona signed DJ Dallas.
It could be. All right, question number three. Just kind of looking at polarizing draft picks, Brock. Who's jumping out to you?
Yeah, J.J. McCarthy is still going to be the most polarizing. The fact that you're our buddy Matt Miller, and I'm gonna give him grief. I mean, that was a pillow fight between you and Field. There was no animosity. I'll tell you what, Matt Miller comes on and he tries to tell me that J.J. McCarthy is not a first-round quarterback. He and I are going to go at it because I don't understand that at all. Actually, I do. I do understand that. Because he is a great debate, Salk, between scouts and then the coaches. coaches like Jim Harbaugh, coaches like Antonio Pierce, coaches like, I don't know, Sean Payton, you know what they want? Winners. I don't know, coaches like Mike McDonald. I want a dude that's proven to be a winner. I don't just need all these great, beautiful traits. Now, when I get great, beautiful traits and I get a winner, yeah, that's obviously a number one pick. That's Caleb Williams. Dude has won everywhere he's been in his life, in high school, at Oklahoma, at USC. Now, not a national title like JJ because he didn't have the supporting cast. But yeah, that guy goes number one. JJ McCarthy, if this was solely coaches, he would be the number two pick in this draft. I really believe that. Maybe, you know, him and Jaden Daniels would be a great debate. Because Jaden can really run, threaten the defense, and do all those things that drive coaches crazy on the defensive side of the ball. But scouts, Mel Kuypers, Matt Millers, you still find, you know, who Lance Zierlein, like, no, second round. I see second round guy. Mm. I see 6'2". I see small hands. I don't see all this dynamic. Yeah, I don't see all these boxes checked. So production, you know, hardly threw the ball. Yeah, he's second round pick. So he will continue to be a fascinating conversation as scouts who are now in these buildings and coaches butt heads together, find friction point, and see ultimately where they end up going.
Matt Miller will join us tomorrow at 8:30.
Heck yeah, he will.
How about that?
Him and I are going at it.
8:30 tomorrow morning for Matt going Miller, ESPN Draft.
Multitasking.
Was Brock talking? I'm sorry, I was just booking Matt Miller. Was Brock busy rambling on about JJ McCarthy again?
We know how that happens.
All right, that's today's Blue 88.
I was just word vomiting.
Well, hey, somebody had to book Matt Miller, and you know, I thought I'd get it done while you were talking, basically before I forgot about it. Which
I mean, I have his phone number too, but so just, you know.
Do you think that there was
time? He wasn't busy during Blue 88.
You know what? I actually don't even have his phone number somehow.
Do you think there was a fight at one of these tees? Honestly, now I'm thinking like there must have been a brawl. There must have been something that went wrong.
Something that ended
Yes. And then the tees just
probably went, a Roxbury Latin. Those guys, they locked us in our locker room. We couldn't even get out in time for the game. I felt like Bruce Arians. I'm like, hey, we're just trying to, you know, get out of here. And these guys are keeping us in our locker room. The weather's changing every time we have
they
the
did
ball.
What? Yeah. They locked you in?
They did. Yes.
Like in a porta potty? They put a padlock on there?
Yeah, there was like a chains on the door, and we couldn't get out in time for the game. Typical Roxbury Latin hijinks. All right. Coming up, Brock, the guy who plays with the biggest smile you've ever seen had quite a night. He was all over the place, and it's next on Brock and Salk.